FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 9/16/19. Well, things are heating up in the Middle East. Missiles are flying, or drones are droning, whatever. But this has led to price of oil being up some $6 a barrel, $6.28 to be precise. It's over $60, $61 a barrel now. You're looking at gold up $14.80. It was higher before, and silver up 49 cents the ounce. Well, what is going to be of this? Is this just another false flag attack? You didn't hear the missiles were fired, perhaps drones, against Saudi oil installations, which has resulted in 5% of the world's petroleum production being immobilized, neutralized, at least for the time being. Could be a while before it goes back. Is it those nasty Iranians? Are they behind it? Or what is it? Who is behind it? We don't know the answer to that yet, but according to our president, we will soon. But when you want answers about gold, silver, markets, well, John Rubino's the man, and you find him at dollarcollapse.com. John, so first, happy Monday. Been a while. I'm back from Beaver Creek, and there was no sign of missile attacks on the slopes of Beaver Creek. What do you make of all this?
Hey, Kerry. It's hard to know where to start with this one. It's an example of how crazy our world is now, that after somebody took out a big chunk of Saudi Arabia's oil capacity, the search began for false flag narratives. In other words, who did this and then lied about it? And Zero Hedge came out with, well, the Saudis did it because it happened right before the IPO date for their Aramco oil company.
And how does that make sense?
Well, you know, it only makes partial sense. But the idea is that pushes the price of oil up, which makes their big giant, you know, it's the biggest oil company in the world, makes them more valuable, which raises the price they'll be able to get for their IPO. But yeah, I agree. That doesn't make much sense because, it's not typically the way you boost prices before an IPO. You know, you don't blow up half your capacity.
No,
in the hope that the other half becomes more valuable. That would be like Google blowing up a server farm right before an IPO. You know,
It's like donating your kidney, because not because you're helping somebody out, but it makes your other kidney much more valuable to you, right?
This makes no sense. Yeah, then sell that on the open. Yeah. So So it probably wasn't Saudi Arabia who did it. But the another big choice is the U.S. of course, because we love our false flag attacks that allow us to start wars. And you know, the minute this happened, the U.S. came out and said, well, obviously Iran did it. You know, like how can we know that? Flew into something, blew up. There can't possibly be any fragments, John, to look for.
They just seized another oil tanker. They've been doing stuff there, blowing up tankers. Unless you want to say that every single thing is a false flag, the odds are good. They're a bad actor. Whether they did this or not, I don't know. But
that's my point, though. How would the U.S. know instantly that it was Iran? It's completely possible that it was Iran because there's a lot of stuff going on over there. But the fact that we immediately blame them, that feeds the U.S. false flag narrative. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. Nobody knows
it's like 9/11. No sooner had the buildings come down than they identified all of the hijackers. And if they were that good, why didn't they identify them before they crashed the planes in the building, not after, if they were so good, the CIA, right? That's what always bothered me. It certainly has the potential to be a false flag. I'm not sure who gains what here.
I'm not saying it is a false flag. I'm saying our world has become so cynical that when something like this happens, we don't take it at face value. We immediately start looking for the under the surface reason that it happened and try to figure out who's lying about it, right? Because we don't trust the big systems anymore. See, that's partially the real story here, is that we don't immediately take things like this at face value anymore, because we're so used to the guys in charge of pretty much everything lying to us about stuff in order to get what they want.
Well, you automatically assume when in doubt, just assume they're lying.
Yes. Yeah. And that's a bad thing in this world, because we need to be able to trust somebody. And if we can't trust anybody, we, you know, at least in the financial sense, we're going to behave accordingly, which means risk off big time in the global financial markets. But you know what the real story is here, Kerry, is technology. Mm-hmm. If this really was a drone attack that took out half of probably the best guarded and most modern oil facility in the world, then that means that, you know, it might have come from the Houthi rebels in Yemen, right? Maybe it was Iranian technology, and or maybe the Houthi rebels got a hold of some drones some other way.
They're thinking not from the direction of the attack, but anything is possible.
Yeah, well, the original news stories said it was Houthi rebel attack, you know, but then again, we don't know any of this, but the fact that it was drones, if indeed it turns out to be drones, that means anything is possible now, because if you can use cheap, relatively off the shelf drone technology to take out big facilities like this, what can't you take out? You know, if somebody wants to assassinate the head of Exxon or General Motors, now they can just fly a drone through the office building window on the floor that the executive is, with a couple of pounds of C4 or, you know, whatever equivalent explosive you put on drones, and boom, you know, you've taken out the guy you want to take out. Or if you want to take out an airliner or something like that, same thing. You know, all of a sudden, all kinds of asymmetric warfare becomes possible that wasn't possible before. And the potential for chaos then rises exponentially. And I think that historians will probably look at this and say, well, okay, the big deal about this attack was that it was done, was the way it was done. And that opened the floodgates for all kinds of other stuff. Because remember, drones, today's generation of drones, if they can do this, that's pretty impressive, but they're getting better exponentially at the same time too. So they're getting smaller, they're getting smarter, they're getting faster. Their ability to surveil and to attack is increasing all the time. So that means bad actors' ability, and I'm including most of the major governments in the world in that category, their ability to do crazy things now is increasing exponentially along with drone tech. So that, you know, the world just got a lot scarier, no matter what this means financially. You know, maybe Saudi Arabia gets their oil production back online sooner rather than later, and the prices go back down, and the financial markets calm down, at least as far as this thing goes. But the world, regardless, did get a lot scarier after this. And I think that's the big story.
And it's going to stay scarier. Because, well, we don't know if they're drones. They're saying they might have been cruise missiles. Who knows? Somehow they came in under the Saudi air defense system, which I thought they had purchased the Israeli Iron Dome system, but maybe it's not installed yet. The other thing, the other beneficiary here is American oil tool and manufacturing companies, because now that Russia's going to be on to get that production back up, because the Saudi government relies upon it, and it'll be billions and billions of dollars that they have to pay. And you know, when this type of thing happens, they don't just put it back to the way it was, they upgrade it, because you know, you can only upgrade your oil equipment so often. It's very costly, but when you have to replace it, then perfect time for the upgrade cycle. And there'll probably be benefits to that, to Saudi oil production as well. So it could very well wind up, John, having the negative, the opposite of what it was intended, which was to drive down production and drive up prices. At the very least, whoever did it had that in mind, for sure. Whether there's a strategic aim or not, they wanted those oil prices higher and they wanted production down, which is exactly what they accomplished.
Well, and the Keynesians are loving this too, because blowing something up and rebuilding it increases global GDP. Yeah. So the world economy is going to grow faster because of this than it would have otherwise. Ah, Kerry, what a world we live in now. Yeah.
You know? Well, they're working on, there's just an article here I was reading before we got on. The British army is looking at buying these drone blasters. They're basically looks like a rifle, and it shoots out a laser beam and directed to drones. So, and the president has had these drone detector blasters around him for years, but for other us, other mere mortals, there's no saving us.
Well, that tech is going to get cheaper too. So it could be that in the future, that's just going to be a normal home defense weapon,
drone killer.
You know, some kind of electromagnetic thing that knocks drones out of the sky. Because, you know, if I ever have a house again, I want a fenced yard to make nude sunbathing possible, of course, you know, so I'm going to be going to have to be able to take the drones out of the sky that fly over. So that's just going to be a basic thing.
I would like to have some anti-aircraft missiles in my backyard too.
Everybody should have
really handy. Yeah. Never know. You just never know.
Yeah. Or a trained eagle or something like that. You know, there's a lot of different anti-drone technology out there that people are working on. So like everything else, it's, you know, a cat and mouse kind of arms race with drones. Mm-hmm. And we'll develop better ways of knocking them out of the sky, and then we'll develop smaller, more hardened kinds of drones that are harder to knock out of the sky. And, you know, it'll just go on and on. But the little swarming ones are the ones that scare me, where they're the size of insects. Mosquitoes, and they've got sharp edges, so 1,000 of them can just fly at you and cut you to pieces and then fly away, you know.
Or a 500,000 of them, or a million of them unleashed on a city could just kill everybody.
Yes. Yeah, it would be a kind of terrorism that is inconceivable now, but is completely technologically feasible at some point in the not too distant futures. Yeah. So stuff like that. See, the next war, say a war 20 years from now, is going to be almost unrecognizable from our point of view today, just because there's so much stuff like this being developed, and we have no idea how they're all going to interact, right? Autonomous submarines with nuclear weapons and autonomous robots on the ground that are like tanks, but with better weapons and run by AI and doing, you know, doing things according to an algorithm rather than to a human. You know, all this stuff is terrifying, but it's coming. Mm-hmm. So it could be the only solution is space migration. I think we might need to get off this planet.
Well, that's what Musk is trying to do.
Future.
That's what Elon Musk is trying to do, right? I mean,
he has a point that we're really not diversified right now. You know, all our eggs are in this one basket.
Yeah.
And there's too many of us too close together with increasingly crazy weapons. So and with a lot of other industrial processes that are poisoning everything. So it's time for us to spread out and spread our bets around a little bit.
Yeah. Good idea.
Anyhow, that doesn't really help us with our financial planning right now, does it? So
not really. So where are we with that?
Well, gold and silver like this crazy world, right? They're up big today, as you said, and the mining stocks are up. And to the extent that it's pretty much baked into the cake that things get crazier from here, just because the fixed income market, in other words, the global debt burden is now growing kind of exponentially. You know, we're seeing this kind of blow off terminal top behavior in the fixed income markets. In other words, the amount of debt that everybody has is now growing faster than it was in the past. And it was already growing incredibly fast in the past. But, you know, you're seeing China take on trillions of dollars of new debt this year at the same time that they're lowering bank reserve requirements, which is an incentive to lend even more money out there. And U.S. corporations are taking on record amounts of debts at an accelerating pace. And a funny story out of Japan on this subject, the Japanese junk bond market is shriveling up because Japanese banks are now so desperate for yield that they're lending directly to really risky corporate buyers or borrowers, which they didn't used to do. They didn't used to want to touch, you know, a junk bond caliber company for loans. But and then so the junk bond market was able to service those companies. But now the junk bond market doesn't have any business because the banks are just in there lending directly to really, really risky borrowers. And you're seeing stuff like that all around the world. Whereas crazy as the debt markets were 2 years ago, they're even crazier now. And that's the hallmark of a blow off top in a bubble. When you have this last burst of absolutely incomprehensible deals where everybody's trying to get one last piece of that easy money. And and so the terms of deals get even more surprising to anybody with a sense of history. And that seems to be what's happening in the debt markets now. And that's part of why interest rates are plunging the way they have been, because there's so much demand for traditional paper like treasuries that that the U.S. government and all the other big governments are able to borrow money at increasingly favorable rates. And interest rates spiked a little bit just lately on some good news on trade, et cetera, et cetera. But now they're going back down again today. So, you know, the process of the U.S. heading towards zero and then negative interest rates hasn't been derailed by any of this. And it's still in progress. You know, Trump just came out and said he wants a big rate cut from the Fed, you know, quote unquote, big.
Is that for Christmas or re-election? How's that going to work?
Well, see, governments always want easy money heading into an election. Mm-hmm. So it's no surprise that Trump wants easy money right now, because that's just what you want as you stand in front of people and extol the great economy that you've created, right? You want interest rates to be down and everybody to be borrowing money and spending it. And then you worry about the consequences of that after you get elected. You know, then you can have your recession when you have four more years before you have to defend your record again. So that's no surprise. But Trump is doing it in public, whereas previous presidents did it in private. But the Fed is under a lot of pressure to cut rates. And they probably will, even with some halfway decent economic news out. Every once in a while, you get a pretty good economic report. The general trend is somewhat weakening around the world, but not falling off the table or anything. And the U.S. is putting up some pretty decent numbers. So in that kind of a situation, the Fed wouldn't normally be cutting aggressively like Trump wants them to, but they might be forced to. Mm-hmm. Just because the trend is still lower for interest rates around the world. And, you know, remember, the dollar is getting stronger lately. Yeah. And that's a problem for our export industries, because we can't sell stuff to the rest of the world priced in dollars if the dollar gets more valuable. And Trump doesn't like that. No, he's saying, why aren't we devaluing our currency like Europe is? And
you know what he is? He's a master debaser.
Yes. You know, it's funny. Trump in foreign policy, you know, I'm not really too worried about him attacking Iran, because he doesn't have that impulse. He doesn't really, you know, his first choice of action isn't to bomb the hell out of somebody. And he fired John Bolton as his national security advisor.
Yeah, that was a good
sign. Totally wanted to bomb everybody in the world. He is
absolute McCain.
Crazy chicken hawk. Yeah.
He was like McCain.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny. Trump said something in a speech or someplace a while ago where he said, you know what? I find myself actually having to rein in my national security advisor instead of him reining me in, you know. And for him, I guess, for Trump, that was a new experience to have to tell his subordinates to calm down.
Well, he had to know what he was getting here. John, you know, the guy, the one thing you have to give Bolton credit for, it's like he might be this crazed neocon, whatever you want to call him, but he stuck to his values. He has certain beliefs, and he didn't change and tell Trump what he thought Trump might have wanted to hear. You know, he's consistent. So Trump had to know what he was getting with this guy. But look at all the people he's fired. Now, many people perceive this as instability and bad things. Man, I think it's great. When was the last time you ever saw a president fire so many of his close advisors? This is, I think it's great.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Silver One Resources is an exploration and development company backed by strategic investors Eric Sprott and SSR Mining. The company is focused on its Candelaria Mine project in Nevada, where there is already a historic resource estimated at 127 million ounces of silver. The Candelaria Mine historically was the highest grade silver producer in Nevada, generating over 68 million ounces of silver at an amazing average production rate of over 1,250 grams per ton. The project has tremendous expansion potential as past drilling has outlined deeper, high-grade silver targets for future drill programs. Silver One is highly leveraged to the price of silver and is cashed up and poised to increase shareholder value. Silver One trades in New York under the ticker SLVRF and in Toronto under the ticker SVE. To learn more, go to silverone.com. That's silverone.com.
The Financial Survival Network.
It's all about what's next.
Well, the result of it, which is that we're not actively bombing a whole bunch of people that we weren't bombing when Trump took office, is good. So if that's what it takes to keep us out of more foreign wars, you know, of the endless wars that we started a long time ago and are still going on, so be it. You know, fire them all, you know, bring in a new bunch of guys, as long as that keeps you busy enough so that you're not out there bombing other countries.
Cool. I guess that's the key.
You know, however it works out.
That's the key, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that is the key. But anyhow, this is all of the stuff we're talking about is great for gold and silver. If the world is getting crazier and crazier and we're debasing our currencies and taking on more debt at an accelerating rate, then you really want to be in real assets and not
financial
assets.
You almost have to be. Yeah, gotta be. I mean, although the stock market's has really hung in there, you know, you gotta say, considering everything we've gone through here, the stock market's been hanging in pretty well.
Yeah. And part of the reason, well, there are several reasons for that. One is that stocks now yield in the S&P 500 yields more than a lot of treasury paper, right? So if you need to generate income, then the S&P 500 is a better bet than treasury bond. Meanwhile, treasury bonds are generating big capital gains because when interest rates go down, treasury bond prices go up. So you've got a lot of fixed income managers now who are, and everybody who are buying treasury bonds, not with the expectation of generating income, but with the expectation of generating, you know, another 28% capital gain this year over last year. And that's turning the financial markets on their head. So if stocks are safe haven assets, then that gives you another reason to buy them. You know, even if they're priced for perfection and they're at levels where there used to be price crashes, you're not buying them for their price appreciation anymore. You're buying them because they yield 3%. That's a great yield. And at the same time this is happening, the world is getting scarier and scarier, which means U.S. assets become more and more attractive for people in China and Europe and Latin America and pretty much everywhere else. So you're seeing capital inflows into the U.S., into the U.S. dollar, into the U.S. Treasury market, and to U.S. blue chip stocks. And that's kind of Martin Armstrong's thesis.
Yeah, it's proving true.
It's proving to be true because even at these valuation levels, there's still a lot of demand for blue chip stocks because where else are you going to go? You know, I would say gold and silver, but those markets are so tiny that, 1% of global investable capital flowing into gold and silver would send them into turmoil. You know, they would just rock it. And therefore, precious metals can't accommodate the kind of money that we're talking about here. You know, the kind of money that moves the S&P 500 would just shut down the precious metals market because you just wouldn't be able to get physical anymore if that much money poured in.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. I get all that. But still, it's just disturbing to see financial assets trading at these levels because you know eventually it's going to blow up. You know this is fundamentally wrong in every way except for the fact that there's nowhere else to go. And you shouldn't be owning stocks and bonds in the U.S. But if you have nowhere else to go, maybe that's what you got to do. I mean, if you're a pension fund manager and you've got a mandate to put 40% of your incoming capital into equities, then okay.
Yeah.
You got to buy the S&P 500 at today's prices.
Yeah. What else can you do? You have no choice.
Yeah. But see,
the Taj Mahal of Baltimore, right? I mean, that's what it is.
But see, financial markets in which there's nowhere else to go, eventually blow up. You know, that's not a long-term investment thesis. Well, I can't put it anywhere else, so I'll put it here, even though this isn't really valued correctly. You know, that blows up on you eventually. So the question is, when does this blow up? And is it this year or next year or sometime further in the future? We can't know that, but God, you know, this is going to be one of those things where you look back on it and think, okay, on that day, I should have mortgaged my house and put every single penny of it into shorting tech stocks. Yeah. And that day is coming, you know, there's going to be a day like that. We can't know. We'll only know it after the fact, but there is going to be a day like that.
By the way, I know you're kind of philosophical and you like good quotes. And I picked this one up today from an article I was reading. Doubt is the foundation of clear thinking. Only by questioning every premise and discarding those that cannot bear weight do you build an edifice of belief worth living in.
Good quote. That's good.
I love that one.
And you know, that's what we should be doing now as we look out into the world. We should be seeking out people who disagree with us and seeing what they have to say, because right now we're kind of siloed in the US, where liberals watch the liberal media and get their beliefs reinforced. Conservatives watch Fox News and other similar kinds of conservative media, and their ideas are reinforced. And so we aren't challenging ourselves. We aren't allowing ourselves to be challenged. And so we got a lot of really wrong ideas out there because of that, because nobody's saying, well, okay, this is good, but there's a fatal flaw and you need to look at this fatal flaw. And so if we were doing that more often, in the links list on dollarcollapse.com, I post a lot of stuff I definitely disagree with, but because it's provocative and it makes you think.
Absolutely.
And because of that, it's useful, you know?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with it. You know, you really need to think out of your box. You know, I read these left-wing things. I mean, they're really unreadable. Because as a former attorney, the one thing you do is you test statements, you apply logic to what people are saying. There is no logic on the left anymore, John. It's not like, you know, like, yes, big corporations are evil, but big government is an outgrowth of big corporations are an outgrowth of big government. Big government is at least as evil, if not more evil, than the big corporations it's partnered up with. So you can't have one without the other, right? These big corporations would be little tiny nothings without government subsidies, incentives, support, the picking of winners and losers. So, and I'm not saying that all the rights rhetoric is fully logical and provable, hardly. Quite the contrary. There's lies going on in both directions. But these presidential candidates here, John, and I wanted to bring this up before we go our separate ways here, they are the definition of insanity, these people. They have not a clue. And they want, you know, they're looking at real fascistic authoritarian solutions to the problem of gun violence. That won't work anyway, because then a monopoly of force given to the government, we know how that works out, right?
Yeah, it does seem like both sides in most arguments now have half the story right and half of it wrong. And in a normal democracy, you work out a deal where you take the best ideas from one side and the best ideas from the other side, and that is what is politically possible. And so you cut a deal. And, you know, you got something that nobody's really happy with, but that kind of sort of works. You know, that's the best you can hope for in a democratic system, kind of sort of working, you know. And in our world now, we're so polarized that each group with half the truth refuses to even consider the possibility that the other group has a few things going for them, you know, a few good ideas. And so we're not getting any kind of deal done on any subject out there to speak of. And so we're ending up with gridlock, which, you know, gridlock used to sound like a good thing, because then the government couldn't cause any trouble if it wasn't actually doing anything. But now we've got all these embedded spending programs that just operate on autopilot and grow 5 or 6 or 7 or 8% a year. So we're heading on autopilot off a financial cliff. Mm-hmm. And so in that case, gridlock is that, that's just like, tying down your gas pedal on a car.
It's suicidal. It's really suicidal.
Like, yeah.
Somebody's got to make a decision. I don't care if it's the right one or the wrong one, but they got to make a decision. You know, that's all I want. And that's why Trump was elected, believe it or not, because love him, hate him. I'm sure many of you out there do hate him. I mean, he's less than perfect for sure, but the guy is a leader. Nobody can deny that he's a leader, John.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, he, especially in the sense that he knows how to dominate the news cycle and bring everybody to his turf in every debate.
Yeah.
I run a thing called the top 10 videos of the week on Dollar Collapse. And I found interview of Matt Taibbi, who's the Rolling Stone investigative reporter who breaks a lot of really good stories. Yeah.
Yes.
Talking about Trump. And, you know, it started out with he and the interviewer just, you know, hating Trump, right? They don't like Trump at all.
Yeah.
But they spent the rest of the interview lamenting how good Trump is at dominating states and how the Democrats are just terrible and they let themselves be suckered in every single time. And Trump is just so, you know, and so it ended up being kind of
laudatory,
grudging almost. Respect.
Yeah. Backhanded compliment.
Yeah. And they did a really good analysis of how Trump does it. It's the best analysis I've seen.
It's like so easy. It's so easy for him. He's so natural at it. And that's what gets them more than anything. Every time he lays a trap for them, they go for it. They immediately snap it up.
Yeah, exactly. And here's what these guys were saying, how it works is Trump will say some just out of left field, crazy mean thing about another candidate.
Yeah.
And then that other candidate will just, you know, try to ignore it and finally won't be able to resist engaging. Uh-huh. And so then they both sink to a really low level where they're calling each other names and everything. Mm-hmm. And for the other candidate, that's a problem because now everybody's seeing both of them as dirty campaigners, blah, blah, blah. But for Trump, that doesn't hurt his popularity. You know, everybody knows that about him and they accept it. But by the other guy sinking to that level, he loses more popularity, loses more respect among the electorate than Trump does. So it's a win for Trump, even though both of them are behaving basically the same way in ways that we don't like. But he loses fewer votes than the other guy.
Yeah.
And it works for him every time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because look, when he does it, it's authentic. When they come back, like when when Marco Rubio was commenting on the size of his hands, it was totally fake. So Trump can be an authentic, nasty person, but the other people, they could be nasty, but they're stooping to his level and they just can't pull it off. Yeah. And, you know, like when... what's his name? Who was it? Which one female candidate dropped out? I can't even remember. There's been so many of them. And then Trump trolled them with a tweet saying, "Hey, I'm really happy she dropped out because she was the one I was scared of." Yeah, it was brilliant.
Or the Elizabeth Warren thing where he kept calling her Pocahontas, Pocahontas, Pocahontas until she finally went out and got that DNA test, which was a catastrophe for her. You know, he goaded her into doing something that cost her big time. Mm. And Matt Taibbi in this interview was saying that Bernie Sanders is basically the only Democrat that has figured out how to oppose Trump. And he just ignores Trump most of the time and then goes straight to Trump's voters. Mm-hmm. And tells them about all the free stuff they're going to get if they vote for him. And that's how you deal with Trump. You don't get personal. You don't stand up and pick a straight up fight with him. You go to the people that like him and say, "You know what? I can do better for you." Mm-hmm. And so Bernie Sanders kind of has that down, which makes him, in these guys' terms, in Matt Taibbi's terms, the more formidable candidate versus somebody like Biden or Elizabeth Warren.
Well, Biden, I don't believe Biden's a real candidate. But my take on him is he's not really running. He's running because the moderates know that if they go so far to the left, they have no chance to lose all 57 states. You know, they don't have a prayer. So they don't have anybody there because they can't run Hillary again. But they're putting Biden up there to suck the oxygen out of the left candidates. And at some point, when Biden has the nomination wrapped up, he's going to step aside and they'll have to appoint somebody else, and then they can pick the person they want, because the person they want right now cannot win the primaries. I don't know that Biden can. The guy is like falling apart before our very eyes. He's a bumbling mass of neurons that just can't seem to fire in sequence.
Yeah. I was going to say that there's now speculation that he's kind of losing his mind, and that's not the kind of thing that you can win elections with.
Well, you can win
he has to be extremely articulate from now on, because any little misstatement, any little stumble is now seen in context of, oh, maybe he's seen how when Hillary got really sick in the last election, where she seemed to be failing physically.
Oh, she was, no question.
Once that starts, any normal thing that you do where you trip, people trip, or they reach for something and miss it or something like that, that it was interpreted in terms of her failing health. And that's a disaster. And so Biden has that problem now.
Yeah. And he can do no right. But I think just because you're senile, just because you're losing your mind and you have dementia, that might make you more qualified for the left. You know,
this will be a pretty interesting choice for voters now. Do we vote for Trump, who is in a lot of ways overtly crazy, or do we go for the guy
crazy.
Who's going crazy slowly right in front of us, you know?
Yeah, it's melting down before our very eyes.
Yeah.
You can't even take an insult from Kamala Harris, a lying insult that if he had been on his game, he would have torn her to shreds for that because it was a lie. The guy's got a lot of issues, but he's not a racist. Busing was always a bad idea. Everyone hated busing, from the people who got bussed to the people who people got bussed to. Everyone hated it with a passion. If they had just taken that money and put it into the schools and built them up and really, created good schools that everybody wants to go to, instead, busing led to the downfall of public education, the final nail in the coffin, public education. It should have never been brought up as an issue. It was indefensible at the time, and in looking back in history, it's even more indefensible. But he can't even handle that. And the guy Yang saying, you don't remember, you don't remember, you don't remember. Yeah. I think it was Yang and Beto O'Rourke. I mean, you can't even take these people seriously, John. Anyway, we have to take our show seriously, and we got to come back and do it again next week. Make sure you go over to John's site. It's dollarcollapse.com. Hey, what are your thoughts about the election? I've got a lot of emails stored up right now, but I will be getting them to them this week, I promise. KL@KerryLutz.com. That is the email address to send your opinion to. Anyways, you know all the other stuff, the Twitter feed @KerryLutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. John, we will be catching up with you next week, and I'm sure it's going to be even crazier.
Well, just, keep your windows closed, Kerry. We don't want any drones flying in.
I got impact glass. It'll take 180 mile an hour impact, but I don't think it can fend off missiles. But we'll see.
Okay, that's a new growth stock out there. Whoever makes that impact glass is going to be really rich pretty soon.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.